from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. When I think about when flying was fun, I think about the warm cookie. I used to fly a lot on a great little airline called Midwest Express, and they served warm chocolate chip cookies baked on board. The days of the warm cookie in the main cabin are, of course, long gone. But this week, travelers got a break. We will soon be allowed to be on our screens all the time. Yesterday's FAA ruling means that the 10,000-foot rule before you can use portable electronic devices will go away as soon as the first of the year. In the hour ahead, we'll get the latest on the new rules and whether the overall airline's experience will improve as we approach the holiday travel season. That's next on Forum. Warm cookies not included after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Yesterday, the FAA issued a ruling that sent screenful joy through the souls of air travelers everywhere. As soon as the first of the year, smartphones, tablets, e-readers, and the like, so long as they're in airplane mode, can be used from practically wheels up to wheels down. Talking on your cell phone is still off limits, but the new ruling means you no longer have to wait until you reach 10,000 feet before you can log on and lock in to the screen in front of you. Joining us now to talk about why the new ruling took place, what it means for air travelers, Michael Huerta, the administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration. Mr. Huerta, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This must be the most popular you've ever been, I suspect.
It is proving to be very, very popular. But we really wanted to take a look at these rules that have been around for a very long time. Soon after I became administrator in January, I asked our folks to take a look. These rules have been around for about 50 years, and of course, everything in technology has evolved a lot, particularly over the last 50 years. And we put together a group of experts from across every segment of the aviation industry, as well as passenger advocates and manufacturers of devices, and we really asked them to look at the question, could we do something differently here? And I think we came up with an appropriate response, which balances safety, but at the same time responds to what consumers are looking for.
It sounds like the question that everyone wants to know first is how soon this will happen. I said in the introduction, as soon as the first of the year, but I've also seen some airlines say they're ready to go today. So what can you tell us about when this will actually become an actuality for air travelers?
We have received a handful of plans from some specific airlines. We're reviewing those, and we're looking at two things. One is to make sure that they conform to the guidance that we provided to the airlines yesterday, and also ensuring that we have consistency, a level of consistency that exists across the industry. But we'll be responding to those very quickly.
So sooner than the first of the year is a possibility?
Oh, absolutely.
And what about the question of consistency? Because it's easy to envision how you could do one thing on JetBlue, let's say, and another on United. Is that what you're going to try to not have happen so that, generally speaking, the rules will be the same across airlines?
Well, airlines are in different places with respect to their fleets and the types of seats they have. And so every airline is going to have to come up with a specific plan that works in their operation. We do want to make sure that we're not doing things that are completely inconsistent with one another between airlines. And so we want to make sure that passengers can have a reasonable expectation when they get on a flight that while there might be specific things that are different given the configuration of a particular aircraft or the operating practices of a particular airline, that for the most part, they will be free to use their devices during all phases of flight.
But it's possible that, for example, in a week I'm going to fly on one major airlines for most of my route and then hop on a regional for the last leg, that in time, once these rules are actually played out, that those my experience could be different on those two flights.
It could be, but I would put it in the same category as your experience will be different on those two legs for your carry-on bags as well. And a lot of that has to do with how the aircraft are configured, how much space there is. And so those are the kinds of factors that need to be considered.
And on the question of safety, which you referenced, what is actually at stake with safety? There's sort of been, I think, this general mythology that use of certain devices would somehow make air travel less safe. What do we really know about that, and what is it that you still want to safeguard against, I guess?
Well, the concern has always been do these devices emit some sort of a radio signal or electromagnetic signal that would interfere with the onboard avionics of the airplane? And what we did as part of this review was to go back and look at how aircraft avionics have evolved over the past years and how these devices have evolved, and really put together what we know about these and subjected it to a lot of analysis to make a determination that these, for the most part, are safe. Now, there will be limited exceptions. We did say that probably about 1% of flights, and those are generally flights in inclement weather, in older combinations of aircraft and avionics, where they might present a hazard. And under those circumstances, the pilot may ask passengers to turn off their electronic devices on landing. And from the from my standpoint, if a passenger hears that, the pilot is asking them to do that for a very good reason, and they should turn off their devices.
And lastly, on the question of vocal communication, cell phone conversations are still going to be off limits. Is that a question of passenger compatibility and annoyance, or is that also a question of safety?
It's actually not within the regulatory authority of the FAA to regulate cell phone service. The Federal Communications Commission is who regulates cell phone service in flight, and their current rules do prohibit the use of cell phones during flight. You're right. There are broader issues there with respect to both passenger acceptance as well as technology. From our standpoint at the FAA, there's not a technological prohibition, but you will want to put your devices in airplane mode because cell phones will have a tendency to ping for towers when you're in flight, and that'll drain your battery, and you don't want to arrive at your destination with a dead battery.
Michael Huerta, I know you have to leave us, Administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration. Thank you for joining us. Go back to being popular. It doesn't happen often in Washington these days, so enjoy it while you can.
Thank you very much.
Michael Huerta, the Administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration. We're joined next by Mark Gerchick. He is the author of the wonderfully titled Full Upright and Locked Position, which takes a look at the airline experience, which he has sometimes referred to as the uncomfortable, crowded, and utterly soulless ordeal. Mark Gerchick is also a former FAA chief counsel, and he joins us now. Mr. Gerchick, good morning.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. What do you make of this ruling, and is it significant in terms of making the airline experience more palatable, more enjoyable than it's been? Is it just, or does it just illustrate really how little it takes to make people at least a little bit happier?
I think the latter, Dave. I think what you're seeing is a tremendous outpouring in response to what's, after all, not that huge a change. What it means really is that for the 20 minutes before you take off, between the time the door closes and you take off, and the 20 minutes between the time you're at 10,000 feet and landing, you can use your personal electronic device. Now, you know, that's not exactly an earth-shaking shift, but it's been met with hosannas kind of across the board. And I think it's indicative of the fact that that passengers really are looking for any good news they can in terms of their air travel experience.
And we're going to be talking about that, of course, across the balance of our hour, about the consumer experience and what could be done to improve it. But on these new rulings, do you see any kind of potential problem in them, again, as in terms of the question of consistency? I'm interested in how that will be balanced out and whether or not there's something in there that may actually make passengers more irate if they can do one thing on United and a different thing on Delta.
It's a fair point. There are areas, there's going to be a timing issue here because some air carriers will be allowed to do this before others are. And so you're going to have, you know, I think the public will assume that pretty much now they can keep their devices on, and that's not the case. So there will be a transition period. There's going to be some issues there. I think the agency, the FAA, is going to try to come up with a nearly uniform kind of a spiel that you'll get when you get on the airplane in terms of when you can stow your devices, when you can use them, and so forth. So I think there is going to be a little bit of that. You know, there's a tendency for folks when they get on an airplane, by the time they're there, they've gone through the gauntlet, and they're sitting squeezed in their seat. And you know, there's a tendency to kind of react to everything. So I think there is going to be a little of that. I personally think this issue about cell phone usage is going to be a big issue too, and there are some misunderstandings about that that are really possible, but we can talk about that.
Well, add to the clarification of that, because I didn't know that's something that actually falls under the purview of the FCC as opposed to the FAA. You can understand the passenger concerns that you don't necessarily want someone gabbing next to you the whole trip, but are there also safety issues that need to be sorted out?
No, I think the real issue has been the FCC issue, that the idea is that as you're flying over these various cell tower networks and so forth, that I'm straining at the level of my technological capabilities here, but that basically you're creating lots of connections and disconnections, and this is creating an issue that the FCC thought was a problem a number of years ago. They actually thought about changing this rule in 2007, 2008. And decided not to do that. The FAA, as Administrator Weird has said, doesn't see this as a technological issue. I think there's a lurking social issue here, and there's actually, ultimately, you could even think of it as a safety or service issue on an airplane. If you're going to create the potential for, I think, air rage is maybe a little bit exaggerated, but the potential for a lot of annoyance and interaction and so forth between passengers, that's something that, particularly in the post 9/11 era, we don't really like to see. The air carriers really kind of want a no drama, no fuss, no muss kind of ambiance in the cabin. And if you're going to bring in cell phone usage, there is a lot to suggest that that's going to create problems.
We'll return to that over the course of our hour. I want to welcome in our other guests in just one moment, but one last question before we do that, and that's that, as I understand it, it's still not going to be possible, even with these new rules, that you'll be able to download using, even if you have a Wi-Fi connection on your flight, is that right? And you wouldn't be able to watch live television via the web. And what is it that precludes that possibility?
My understanding is if the airline provides Wi-Fi, and something like I think almost 40% to 50% of carriers are now rolling out Wi-Fi on their aircraft, that you can utilize that with your personal device. Basically, the aircraft is its own sort of mini cell tower, as it were, and it's operating so that you can, if they have Wi-Fi installed, you can download and you can use it as an ordinary internet connection. The issue is if you don't have that on the aircraft, then you're supposed to be, I believe, then you're in airplane mode.
Mark Kirchick, his new book is called Full Upright and Locked Position, The Not-So-Comfortable Truths About Airline Travel Today. We want to welcome into our conversation as well Pauline Frommer. She is a travel expert and publisher with Frommers.com, the budget travel guide. She and her famous father, Arthur, co-host the nationally syndicated radio program, The Travel Show, with Arthur and Pauline Frommer. Welcome, Pauline Frommer, to our program.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And joining us as well is Larry Salas. He is the local chairperson of the Association of Professional Flight Attendants. Larry Salas, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So I want to ask you first, Larry Salas, whether or not your job just got harder or easier. What will it be like now? You won't have to be telling people, turn that off. But on the other hand, there may be other things you have to monitor now. What's the reaction from your colleagues to this new ruling?
Well, we definitely welcome the change to the policy. In the past, we've been having to act like hall monitors and ensure that, all the electronic devices have been turned off and stowed. And while, that'll still be part of our responsibilities, it'll be, slightly changed now to allow for the smaller devices. But overall, we definitely... as safety is our top priority, but we're always looking forward to improving the air travel experience for our customers as well.
Are there some things, though, that you'll now have to make, judgments about the difference between a tablet, which you can hold in your lap, versus a laptop that you're supposed to put in under the seat in front of you? It seems like there's some distinctions that you'll now have to, not that you'll have to be wandering down the aisle with a measuring device, but that you'll have to make certain distinctions you didn't have to before.
Correct. Yes. I mean, I think the policy will be pretty specific and we'll have information that's provided to us so that we're aware of what's allowed, what devices. But my understanding, you know, iPhones, the small e-readers, devices, iPads such as that, will be allowed to be in use. And so we'll have, you know, we'll have specific information prior to this being rolled out. And so we will act more as informers, not necessarily enforcers.
Larry Salas with the Association of Professional Flight Attendants. Pauli Frommer, what's your view on the difference that this will make in terms of the overall air travel experience? I want to widen out our conversation now and talk about the ways in which flying has become less pleasant and the ways in which it might become more pleasant in the future. How significant do you think this ruling is?
I think it's significant. I think it'll both make people very happy and also very confused. Happy because people are addicted to their devices. I'm not a scientist, but I have read about studies where people are getting endorphin rushes from these devices, and I've seen people almost burst into tears on the planes when they've been told they have to shut them off for takeoff and landing. So, I do think this is a significant improvement. However, from what I understand from my research, because the takeoff and landing are the most dangerous parts of the flight in terms of the possibility of crashing, the heavier items like laptops will have to be stowed. And I think that's going to cause a lot of confusion. Why can that guy have his cell phone out, but I have to put away my laptop? As well, the systems that deliver Wi-Fi to planes, most notably Gogo, which does it for the majority of airplanes, are not equipped to start the Wi-Fi until you're at 10,000 feet. Hmm. And so you're going to have a lot of people trying to get on the Wi-Fi because they think they're allowed to now and not being able to do it. The exception to that is Southwest Airlines, which uses another Wi-Fi provider, which can apparently give you the Wi-Fi from the very beginning. And in terms of downloading movies and the like, from what I understand, most of the airlines simply don't have a strong enough signal for that. The exception is JetBlue, which didn't have Wi-Fi on their planes until this year, and because they have all new technology, they're going to have the capacity sooner than the competition for people to download movies and see TV live, et cetera.
So in terms of the kinds of things that might aggravate passengers and for which people should be prepared for, that's one of them. I had the experience a couple of weeks ago of flying across the country, purchasing Gogo, the Wi-Fi service on this airlines, because I thought that by way of doing that, that meant I would be able to watch a game, football game I was interested in watching. Good thing I didn't, because it was a terrible game. Stanford lost to Utah. But in any event, I couldn't do it. But that has to do with the limitations of that particular service, as opposed to some either safety issue or what might be possible if your airlines had a better upgrade of Wi-Fi delivery.
Exactly. And in Gogo's defense, apparently they're working on this. And in 2014, their signal will be stronger and you will be able to download. But for now, no way.
Let's open up our conversation to our listeners as well. What is it about the current airline practices that bug you the most? What sort of changes would you like to see that would make air travel more pleasant for you? Are you excited about this new ruling from the FAA yesterday, or do you worry that now the next thing will be cell phone calls? We'd love to have you join us at 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. You can post your thoughts or questions on our Facebook page or on our website as well. I want to take a moment more to talk about the phone question that you brought up, Mark Gerchick, as being something that you thought would be significant, because I can imagine as that being one more service that the airlines could actually sell, just like right now you can buy a better seat or you have to pay money to get luggage. I can imagine that you could have a system now where, well, you actually can make phone calls if you sit in rows 10 through 15 and we're just going to charge you an extra $75. So is that something that you can foresee?
Well, it's something that could be done. Of course, they can charge for Wi-Fi and they can charge for snacks and extra seat rows. So you're right. To the extent that anything chargeable might get charged. That's the possibility. I do think, though, that there's been a considerable amount of polling and discussion on this issue about cell phones in the air. I think actually the government did a survey. The FCC did a survey in, I think, 2008, where they polled a lot of people on how they felt about it. And there was a slight plurality said, no, we don't want to see cell phones on the airplanes. But there was also a demographic split. The younger you were, the more likely you were to want the telephone on the airplane. And at the 65 and older level, you were pretty strongly opposed to it. So I think that there is that kind of issue. Foreign carriers, there are a number of foreign carriers that do allow telephone calls on aircraft. Emirates has allowed it for years. Virgin Atlantic allows it on certain flights. British Airways, I think, allowed it on their super sort of financier flights from London City Airport to the east coast of the U.S. because they have a lot of folks who really want to stay in touch, I guess. And so they have been allowed, and those foreign carriers say that they haven't had any real problems with it at all. So it may be a cultural issue. It may be that, as we get higher load factors and as we're dealing with more crowding and so forth, that we just don't want another aggravation. And one can imagine spending a couple of 3 hours, 4 hours flying across the country hearing about somebody else's medical problems or political views or romantic interests, and it may not be very pleasant.
And this question of sort of bundling various services and selling them, which is the way airlines have taken to making additional money, there seems to be sort of no limit to it. And I'm just curious, and I'd like our listeners to phone in with their thoughts on what they think might be next. One thing I read yesterday was that, whether or not you could pay to have control of the armrest next to you. I mean, it seems like something silly on the one hand, but the airlines are onto something, aren't they, Pauline Frommer, with this idea that you could really sell anything?
Oh, yes, you can, and they are. The truth is the airlines have to struggle with fluctuating jet fuel costs, and that's really hurt their bottom line. So what they've done is added fees to a lot of things that used to be free in the past to make a profit, and they're literally making billions of dollars, and some of the airlines now are profitable thanks for these fees. The problem is a lot of these people are paying for fees that they don't necessarily need. They're bundling fees and offering them to their elite members and saying, if you pay us several hundred dollars in advance for an entire year, you'll get X, Y, and Z. But because they're elite members already, they're probably already getting some of those services. So some of the airlines are being really tricky in the way they're offering these fees. And some of them are just silly, I think. The idea that you would pay an extra $15 or $20 to have your luggage delivered to your home rather than simply waiting at the luggage carousel, or an extra $15 to get on board the plane first. I don't know. According to Southwest Airlines, they have a fee that allows people to jump to the front of the line. Only one person on every other flight buys that fee. But even with just that extra income, they are adding millions to their bottom line.
Here are some of the things our listeners are writing in, thinking what the airlines may charge us for next. One person says the window seat. Well, actually, you already are charged sometimes if you want that sort of possibility. Howard writes, the next thing will be pay toilets. And Melissa says the next thing will be an air surcharge to cover the cost of getting germ-ridden recycled air so you can breathe the entire trip. We'd like to hear from you next. What would you like to see done so that air travel can be more pleasant as we approach the holiday season? We'll return, take your calls, thoughts, and continue our conversation with Mark Gerchik, Larry Salas of the Air Professional Flight Attendants Union, and Pauline Frommer in just a moment. 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. We'll take your calls next. This is Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic today, the new rules issued by the FAA yesterday, which will allow people to use their screens almost as soon as you take off and tell the moment that you land. What will that mean for air travel? Will it be something that will make the experience more pleasant, or does it open the door to some things that will make air travel even less pleasant than it is today? You can join our conversation at 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts on our Facebook page or on our website. Many other things, too, that we want to cover in this half hour as well. What might airlines do next that would make things more pleasant, like not charging to fly a standby, for example, or changing your itinerary? Lots of things we want to get in front of you. Here's some of our comments so far. Bob writes this question, and Mark Krucek, maybe you can take this. Will passengers be able to Skype? I don't relish sitting next to a Skype conversation any more than a cell phone conversation.
I don't have a precise answer to that, but I believe that they are not allowing that. There have been incidents in which voice over internet protocol conversations were attempted, and I think they were stopped by the flight attendants. This was a couple of years ago, so I'm not sure how this specifically will affect it. But I have a feeling that the spirit of the thing is not to allow voice communications, over the air while you're in the airplane.
And let's go to our first question this morning. Jay starts us out. Jay, go ahead.
Hi. I'm wondering how airlines are going to enforce and verify that people have actually switched their devices to airplane mode. I know a lot of tech-savvy people that probably wouldn't even know how to do that.
Great question. And Larry Salas, that's part of the job that your colleagues will have to do.
Yes, correct. And again, you know, we will be there to inform, you know, the passenger of, you know, the regulation and the rules. But as far as specifically checking, I mean, as it is now, you know, when we go through and perform our safety checks and we're informing, you know, the passenger to turn off their electronic device, you know, we're not specifically standing there. We're ensuring that they are following the policy and ensuring that they know how to turn off their device and that their device is turned off.
And if it were really a problem from a flight safety standpoint, you know, we wouldn't have been allowed to, we would have to check our cell phones or something, right, Mark Krucek? I mean, it's sort of the proof that people leave them on accidentally or on purpose sort of belies whether or not it's really that big a deal.
Yeah, there was a Consumer Electronics Association study, I think it was about a year ago, where they found that something like 30% of people either forget to turn off their device or to put it in airplane mode or simply don't do it, and because they'd like to have all their emails downloaded as soon as they come within the range of the runway. So, it's widely, unfortunately, widely has not been enforced, and I guess the new rule will simply indicate it's not going to be an issue.
Jay, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Patrick in Santa Rosa. Patrick. Patrick, are you with us?
Oh. Are you asking for Patrick B?
Patrick B, yes, you.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to weigh in on the discussion regarding the, you know, what's next, voice calls on airplanes. And I'm into high tech. I work in a high tech job. I carry two cell phones every day. So I'm not opposed to tech. I'm into it, but not on an airplane. You're in a confined space. You're captive. The only place you can go, really, to get away from anything is the restroom, and obviously you're not going to stay in there too long. So I just, having a bunch of people chattering on a confined space aircraft incessantly, especially if you want to take a nap or something, is just beyond the pale to me.
Patrick B., thank you. Thanks for joining us this morning. Isabel writes in, to me, it always seemed like if our electronic devices were such a safety hazard, airlines would have confiscated them. TSA doesn't rely on us to scan our own bags, so why did the airlines rely on us to turn off our phones? No one ever checked to make sure our devices were actually off. Therefore, it isn't such a big deal. Richard writes, technology notwithstanding, have we become so connected electronically that we cannot get off the grid? You cannot drive and text or drive, so why is this such a big issue? Unplug, people. Relax. And heaven forbid, read a book. What do you think, Pauline Frommer? Do you think actually that people will go back to those days of actually reading as opposed to being on a screen?
I wish they would. I think we spend a lot too much time on our screens, and I think off the airplane as well. It's cutting into the travel experience. I went to a conference of the American Youth Hostel Association, and all of the hostel owners were bemoaning the fact, actually it was the International Youth Hostel Association, that people used to meet in the hostel lounges. You would be there with young people from all over the world, and a French person would start speaking with a German who'd start speaking with an American, and friendships would be formed. And now you go to these hostels, and everybody is sitting in their own cocoon, tapping away on their computer, talking to their friends at home. And I think it's a shame. I think it cuts into the travel experience. It might be cutting into our lives.
Mark in San Jose has our next comment. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that a while back, not that long ago, I'm surprised none of you have mentioned it, some airlines had phones on the back of every seat in
right.
the plane. And American did, and then they reduced it to one in every row, one in every, you know, on every side. And, you know, AT&T for one was charging a dollar a minute, so you can imagine how long those calls were. But whenever they had promotions, people would take out their laptops. I knew people that did this and download all their email during the flight and work on it. With that, you know, promotional rate was like $10 as long as you wanted to stay on the line. But I think the bottom line is this has never been a technological issue. It's a revenue issue. And if we're, you know, if we kid ourselves, we shouldn't, because that's exactly what the airlines need it for, is for more revenue. The best response I ever heard, well, it wasn't very pleasant, but because it was said to me, but a British Airlines flight attendant on a flight from London to Rome looked at me and she said, is that phone off? If not, why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, she just continued down the back of it to the back of the plane. But this is not an issue of safety. I mean, 9/11, the plane was brought down probably because the people on the plane in Philadelphia were using their cell phones.
Right, right. Mark, thank you. Thanks for the observation. I want to sort of expand out and think about what airlines could do that would make travel more pleasant for all of us. And yet, obviously, it's also a business and not necessarily be something that would quash their revenue stream. So, Mark Gerchik, one thing that comes up a lot, for example, is why do I have to pay now to fly standby? I didn't used to have to do this. Obviously, that's a revenue maker, I assume, for airlines. But it would seem like if an airline said, we're not going to make you do that anymore, that could be actually a revenue generator because so many people would be so thrilled that an airline would offer that possibility.
Yes. Well, I actually think, you know, it's interesting. The change fees, as you're referring to, the reservation change fees and the bag fees together brought the U.S. airlines $6 billion last year. So this is a huge change fees are a huge revenue generator, and they also serve another purpose for the airlines. That is, they differentiate. They essentially make you buy a more expensive ticket if you want the flexibility. So what they're really doing is they're charging you for that right to change your ticket without a completely punitive penalty for that move. So they're trying to get the business traveler who wants that flexibility, who will pay, you know, maybe twice as much. So I think it's hard to – I wouldn't underestimate the value of a more rigid change policy to the airlines. Now, a number of airlines are trying to loosen up a little bit on this. That is, if you're at the airport, I think within 4 or 6 hours of the flight, and there's an earlier flight that has availability, they'll let you get on it for a relatively small fee, something like $75 in one case. But this is one of the great aggravations, the change fee, and you're absolutely right. But, you know, given the fact that the airlines have really been doing, you know, they lost over $50 billion in the first decade of this century, and this is not an industry that's not worried about their finances. So they're looking for everything they can. In fact, they're looking for more fees. Putting your bag in the overhead bin is now a fee that's sort of starting to come in here, and that's going to really get a lot of people unhappy.
Pauline Frommer, are there ways of figuring out, you know, there are obviously lots of different travel sites where you can compare prices, Kayak and all the rest, but what about, are there ways to figure out sort of which airlines are more consumer friendly when it comes to things like change fees or being able to fly standby? And if so, do you have any tips on sort of how consumers can go about finding an airline that offers more consumer flexibility?
You know, it's an interesting question. There's a site called HipMonk, which will judge the flight by its agony level. and by that, they mean how many connections you have to make. There's seatguru.com, which will tell you which is the best seat and which is the best airplane to fly on. But frankly, I don't know if the public is that interested. I think the public really just wants to get from point A to point B as inexpensively as possible. And that concern has so overridden the others that it's one of the reasons why the airlines aren't really trying to make the flying experience more pleasant. Instead, they're trying to sneak these fees in so they can make more money without, on the surface, raising the price. An exception that I just heard about 2 days ago is Hawaiian Airlines. Bless them, they've added an inch. They are giving customers an extra inch of leg room, and they're trying to make a big deal of this. I don't think it's going to get them any more customers, but it might get them more points in heaven. I don't know.
It is interesting, though, how our sort of standards have changed. I mean, I now consider it a successful flight experience if I just land on the same day that I took off. So, you know, our standards for what makes for a good flight have probably changed. Let's hear from Walter next in San Francisco. Walter.
Hi, good morning. First of all, I'd like to say that my perspective on travel is that it's a team sport. So when you're on the plane, it's a team sport between you, with you, the flight attendants, and your fellow passengers. So that's the first rule going in. Second thing is that I think that you're inherently in a situation where you have absolutely no control over this very small compartment you're in. So the extent to which the airlines can offer a traveling passenger a little bit more control without jeopardizing safety or anything else, allowing, for example, for people to listen to their small devices during takeoff and landing, I think will enhance the overall experience by giving somebody a little bit more control.
Walter, thank you. Yeah, well put. Interesting points. And Larry Salas, that must be music to your ears to have a passenger say that air travel is a team sport.
Yes, absolutely. He said it perfectly that, you know, we're all in a confined space there's lots of issues going on from the moment you get on board the plane, stowing your bags during flight. The whole experience, yes, can be stressful at times, but anything that we, you know, can offer to, you know, try to make the experience more pleasant, we're all for that. We're very happy.
Walter, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Mike in Santa Rosa, who wants to bring up something that I think is the pet peeve of many an air traveler. Mike.
Yes, hi. Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
I was actually quite surprised. I haven't heard anybody say this, but the carry-on baggage situation, I think, needs to be seriously addressed. It slows down the boarding process tremendously. It's completely unsafe if there's ever an emergency. You're in a window seat. I mean, people have full-size baggage under their seat. They have the highway cluttered with baggage. I've been on planes. I fly about 10,000 miles a month, and I've been on flights, and there's the overhead compartment is so jam-packed that the doors pop open and stuff falls out onto the floor. I've seen people get hit by things coming out of the overhead baggage during the flight because they're so packed. I just think the carry-on baggage is just completely out of control at this point.
Yeah, Mike, thank you. Mark Kirchick, weigh in on that and whether or not you see ways, whether or not airlines could further monetize that. You know, you can carry
exactly
it on.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly right, Dave. I mean, the reason that you're seeing the overhead so crammed is that the airlines are charging you to check your bag. That's one reason, plus the convenience issue. But, you know, look, if checking your bag was free, I imagine some of those bags in the overhead would be in the hold of the cargo hold. But you're right. It does slow things down. Larry may have a view on the difficulties that flight attendants face with the bags, because I know they've had lots of problems, including physical problems, dealing with these things. So, yeah, it's a monetizable element. It also extends to early boarding privileges. The reason people pay an extra $15, $20, $30 to board early is so that they can get their oversized bag in the overhead bin before the next guy comes along. So, you know, we're in this kind of a situation now where everything that can't be monetized is. Now, I just wanted to mention one thing, Larry, Dave, if I might, in terms of how things could be better. I think you raised that before. I think that the technology, ironically, is going to make things better and is actually making things better. I think accessibility of Wi-Fi, I think live TV on airplanes, these are things that really do help divert, you know, one's attention and let you work and let you do other things on airplanes that you really were not able to do before. And while physically it's not as pleasant, it can be a much more productive experience, and we're seeing that coming in. Also, you know, the technology of check-ins, for example, you can use the kiosk now. We used to have to stand in long lines to check in at the airport. That doesn't happen anymore. So I think technology, in a way, is maybe a little bit of a savior here for the passenger.
It's funny, you know, I spoke before about it doesn't take much to make us happy necessarily. And I had the experience a couple of weeks ago of being sort of chosen at random to be freed of the security line. I'm not quite sure why, but I just sort of waltzed through. And, you know, I felt like I was king for a day. I mean, it was extraordinary just to not have to take off your shoes and belt and lug out your laptop and all the rest. It's funny how little it is that can make us feel better. Some other comments from our listeners. One writes, if heavy items like a laptop must be stowed, what about that guy next to me reading a hardback version of Stephen King's new book? Well said. Ashley writes, I've always wanted to enjoy following the aircraft's progress over the ground with my phone's GPS during the flight. Will that now be allowed? Anyone know?
I have no idea. This is Pauline Frommer here, but I want to say I'm thrilled that we're talking about some of the positives with air travel, because I think we get obsessed with the negatives, and in a way, air travel is a true miracle. Two generations ago, there would have been no way that somebody could fly across the Atlantic or to Asia in a matter of hours rather than a matter of days, and prices are much lower than they were 30 years ago, allowing a vastly greater share of the population to fly. And to my mind, maybe it's because I'm 5'3" and fairly small. I don't find traveling by plane that onerous. I really don't. Just to, you know, inject a little bit of optimism into the conversation, I really don't think it's the worst thing, and it opens up the world.
Well, and you can add to that the safety issue, too. It is incredibly safe, and it is, you know, the FAA has done a lot with this, but so have the airlines and so have the aircraft manufacturers, including, you know, even with respect to the recent problem at San Francisco with a hard landing crash there, we have a record now where I think, according to one MIT professor, you'd have to basically fly every single day for something like 100,000 years before you'd be involved in a fatal accident.
And let's hear next from Judith in San Francisco. Judith.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. I just flew from Amsterdam to San Francisco. And to follow the last comment, I'm 5'3", but have long legs. Like, the top part of my leg is long. Mm-hmm. So leg room is so important to me. I was crammed in my seat. But given that, they keep reducing or adding more seats to the planes and reducing the space that you have, but they haven't done anything about how far the seats go back. And in my flight, the people in front of me had their seats all the way back, and I literally couldn't get in and out of the seat because there was no space.
It's an interesting point, Judith. I had the experience a year or so back of seeing two people next to me almost get into a fist fight over one person was leaning back and the other person was pushing them forward. And Mark Gerchuk, you've written about that too, and I'm sure, Larry Salas, you've had to deal with that. How much anger have you seen, Larry Salas, with that particular question of reclining back when there's so little legroom?
You know, I've seen that from time to time, but generally it has not been a big issue where, you know, we have to get involved or we're, you know, thrust into a situation like that between two passengers. I would have to agree with Pauline that, yes, while it's a overall stressful situation at times just to get on the plane and we're dealing with a you know, completely confined space and But generally, I mean, I don't see people, you know, acting up or being that. It's generally a pleasant experience for the most part. Of course, there's times where you have weather delays or mechanical delays, and that adds to everyone's frustration. But generally, I think once everyone gets situated and on their way, it's a pleasant experience, generally speaking. And then we don't have situations like that very often where people get into altercations.
Another comment on the pleasantness of the experience. Julian writes, each time I've flown international airlines, the experience has been so much more pleasant and refreshing in almost every way. Why are American airlines so different? And let's also hear from Charles on this question, who also wants to talk about the difference between domestic and international flights. Charles, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Well, I think that the two business models are completely different, and I think the American airlines seem to be missing that. The domestic market obviously functions like a flying bus and probably should function that way, and it's purely price-driven. But I fly across the Pacific once a month, and I'm willing to make a connection in Tokyo or Seoul or wherever and spend an extra 5 hours en route just to fly one of the international airlines, because the American, the American-owned company's planes are filthy, the food is really abominable, and the flight crews are hostile, and I just don't get it. They really need to operate internationally on a different business model if they're going to compete.
Yeah. Mark Kirchick, come back on that, the difference between them and what could be done to make the American international experience or more comparable to what people are saying about other international flights.
Yeah, I think it does depend on the air carrier. I mean, clearly there are lots of European airlines, including some very low cost airlines, that are held up as the model of awful experiences. So, I mean, it's not strictly national, but I think you're right. On the very long haul flights, Trans-Pacific especially, you have a number of carriers, foreign carriers, that have relatively small domestic markets, and that they're flying primarily designed for, and their business model and all their operations are focused on long-haul travel. And that is a very different thing from what you'll get from a major U.S. carrier, where we're flying on average a two-hour, two-and-a-half-hour flight, where you're basically going to cram as many people in because the passenger wants the lowest possible fare. So you're right. There are two different business models. There are almost very different kinds of air travel experiences. You look at a Singapore or an Emirates and some of them, and they're focused particularly at the upper end. Some of their economy class seats are not necessarily any more spacious than any of the U.S. carriers, but the front end are focused on ultra first class kinds of operations. Singapore and some others even have these sort of pods where you're almost private apartments, where you have seven feet of space between you and the next apartment, your own mini bar, and on Emirates you can go take a shower at the in your own personal spa. So that's very high end stuff. You're not going to be seeing that on U.S. carriers.
Chris in Mountain View is a pilot and wants to join in. Chris, go ahead.
Hi, I'm both a pilot and an engineer, private pilot, not a commercial pilot. And I have sat in the cockpit of planes where, if we left our cell phones on while sitting there, the GPS has gone and wigged out while on approach to a mountain airport. So I don't think it's entirely unfounded that that sometimes transmitters like cell phones can cause avionics to not work the way they're supposed to.
Chris, thanks. Thanks for that cautionary note, and it echoes what I think one of you said earlier. Perhaps it was Michael Huerta at the beginning, that if a pilot says, you need to turn this off, that we all still need to pay attention. So, Chris, thank you for that. Some tweets coming in. LK tweets, most planes Wi-Fi doesn't allow streaming of movies because of bandwidth. I'm sure there's a way, a tech way, to improve that. Elena tweets, I love my screen because I can use it to read. My tablet has magazines, books, and downloadable websites. And Sally writes, here's something basic. I would like it if we could keep reserve seats and if the airlines would stop breaking up families. The releasing of seats has several times put my two-year-old all by himself, and then we have to scramble and switch and bargain to sit together when we have reserved seats, sometimes months in advance, or on an airline where we have frequent flyer status. That's ridiculous. And Mark writes, I think the reason the public is generally applauding the new rule is that the old one just didn't make any sense. This change is just common sense breaking out. And last from Samantha, I'm sad. I love the forced respite from devices. It was time for a mental quiet for me. Couple of closing comments from each of you. We'd be remiss, Pauline Frommer, if we didn't ask you for any holiday travel tips. Is it too late, or is there still a way that you can book good deals for the holidays?
Oh, gosh, I wish I had good news on this. Airfares are up 10% from last year, and they're rising every day. The best time to buy was 3 weeks ago, so be sure to buy now. There aren't going to be last-minute deals. And remember that you're flying in storm season. So if you can fly direct, all the better. The fewer times you have to take off, the less likely you'll be delayed. If you have to change planes, avoid the cities that tend to get storms, like Denver, like Chicago. It's just dangerous at this time of year to fly into those cities when you don't have to.
Are there, by the way, Pauline, are there airports that have consistently better track records for being on not only on time, but you know, good baggage delivery, so that you're not waiting for 45 minutes for your bag if you do check a bag? Is that something consumers can find out?
Oh yes, there are airlines or airports that have much better stats than others, and usually about once a year a list comes out, and always the three in New York come in at the bottom.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember what's up on the top. It may be the Hawaiian airports, but I can't remember.
And Larry Salas, a last thought, please, on the value of team sport in air travel.
Yes, that always makes the traveling experience a bit smoother and easier for everyone. As I said earlier, from the boarding process to in-flight, and you know, for us as flight attendants, our top priority is passenger safety, but we're always looking to improve the air travel experience as well.
And I have to catch a flight in a couple of hours, Mark Gerchik, so last advice for me.
Pack a sandwich, bring a pillow, and bring a little patience, and you are certain to get there safely. So enjoy.
Mark Gerchik, thanks very much for being with us. Thanks to Larry Salas and Pauline Frommer for being part of our program today. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Amanda Stupai is our engagement producer. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. Dan Zoll is our senior editor, and Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.